Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you today?
Absolutely fantastic, Ron. A little cold, but surviving.
Okay, yeah, it's one of those days to really bundle up. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Paul Neiman of Market Launchers. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Our sponsor today is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing is your one-stop source for all your marketing, sales, and business development needs. We customize and implement business strategy to help build your business, grow your sales, and encourage your success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, our guest today is Paul Neiman, who's a former columnist for Inventor's Digest magazine. He publishes a free newsletter for inventors called The Online Inventor, writes a syndicated newspaper column that's appeared in more than 110 newspapers, and he teaches marketing at the university level to undergraduate and MBA students, and he's the force behind Market Launchers. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Bill. It's good to be with you guys.
Well, you know...
Well, sure. It's great to have you on our show.
You know, I was subscribed to Inventor's Digest, have for a long, long time, and I remember that article you wrote called the Top 10 Reasons Inventors Succeed. Could you share with our audience what those top 10 reasons are for success?
Sure. In fact, I'll just kind of number them going from number 10 all the way down to number 1. Number 10, become an industry expert. And this is kind of an obvious one that most people don't really think about it. It's easy to overlook this. And the reason is because most inventors want to invent things that they are interested in or that they're good at, when as in reality they may not know anything about the industry. Some of the things that they can do to become an industry expert are to research the companies in their industry. How do they do that? Well, they can visit retail stores where similar products are sold, which means those are the kind of stores that they would sell their product, their new invention at. They should also go to a trade show. Every industry has a trade show, and you can learn about more companies. You can learn who some of the main players are. Best of all, though, you can do your own market research by attending trade shows and walking the show and seeing some of the different booths there. And you also get a chance to meet some of the personnel at these companies that you want to pitch your invention to. Other things that you can do to become an industry expert is read books on the subject of licensing. A couple of them that I read many years ago, and the information is still valid even though I read them more than a dozen years ago, would be Harvey Reese's book called How to License Your Million-Dollar Idea. And that really is a blueprint for succeeding by licensing your product to a new company. That's probably the number one book I'd recommend. Again, it's called How to License Your Million-Dollar Idea by Harvey Reese. Another great one, and very thorough, is called Marketing Your Invention by Tom Mosley. And I believe you can still get those. The UIA used to have a bookstore. You might be able to find them there, or if you just do a Google search, you can find them pretty easily. Number 9, attend industry trade shows. That's one of the best things you can possibly do. It's a great use of your marketing dollars. Number 8, invent for the marketplace. Figure out what the market wants, and then invent something that people will buy, okay? As opposed to trying to just, you know, to invent something that you like and then try to find customers for it. That's backwards. So you figure out what the market wants or where there's a gap in the market and then create a product or an invention to fill that gap. Apple is great at doing this. They invent products that we don't even know we need. Who knew that we needed an iPod to download music for? Okay, but it solves a problem. People don't want to spend $15 for a CD that only has 3 of their favorite songs on there. So they've increased sales of the entire industry by selling 99-cent downloads of any song you want. Okay, what they're doing is inventing for the marketplace. Number 7, invent in an area that you know. Now, you may not always do this, but it helps if you can. And the more of these 10 things you can do, the better your chances of succeeding. Because anybody can invent something, but getting it on the market and then having sales of that product and profits for you, that's very difficult. Most people fail on that as a result. But if you invent in an area you know, and what I mean by that is if you're a mechanic, okay, and you invent a new tool, well, that's inventing in an area you know. You can already be an expert as far as the technology of that kind of industry. Number 6, plan. The successful inventor has a well-thought-out plan, and then you work that plan. There's a saying that says, people don't plan to fail, they just fail to plan. Okay? Number five, make a prototype. Take a picture. You know, the successful inventor has pictures and or a working prototype. In some cases, many cases, even a web page to show to companies. That's very important. You really can't assume that others are going to be as familiar with your new invention as you are because they've never seen it. It's never been out before if it's new. So you really got to explain it to them. You got to have a prototype that can help you explain it and show it to them. And you got to have pictures, drawings, website, or brochure because some people just need to see it. It's hard to envision what something looks like if it's brand new and they've never seen it. Four more to go here. Network. It's very important to network with industry professionals, Ron. You know that. Inventors that have gone before you can show you what works and what doesn't work. If you can even get a mentor of somebody who's been there and done that, that's going to help you tremendously. It will help you in terms of getting to the market faster. It will help you eliminate or reduce many of the costly mistakes that others have made. Number three, learn how the product gets to the consumer. What I mean by that is learn how the distribution channels are set up in your industry. Now, the distribution was changed in major ways about 15, 20 years ago when the Internet started becoming big and you could sell products through your own website for the first time in history, really. But there's still brick-and-mortar stores. There probably always will be. Okay, so learn how the distribution channels are established. Do you go straight to the retailer, or do you sell it through wholesalers who then deal with the retailers? Okay? Or do you want to sell your invention directly to consumers through your website, through mail order, through direct mail, TV commercials, okay, or a combination of any of these? Number two, take responsibility, and that means contact potential licensees directly yourself. Follow up with each one yourself. One of the biggest questions I get from inventors, and there's a lot of them, they ask me if I know of any company that will, quote-unquote, take my invention and run with it. So they're looking for somebody to do the marketing work themselves, and that's crazy. Why is that? You wouldn't ask somebody else to raise your kids for you, would you? Of course not. You got to do that yourself. Nobody cares about your invention as much as you do, okay? Now, there are exceptions to that rule, and sometimes in certain industries, for example, the toy industry is this way, the big toy companies really only deal with toy reps, okay? They don't want to deal with thousands of individual inventors that pitch their products to them. They only deal with about 15 or 20 selected toy reps, and you got to find them in order to pitch your invention to them. Number one reason why inventors succeed, grin and bear it. The successful inventor is willing to do most of the previous nine items, whether you feel like it or not. Now, you don't have to score a perfect 10 in order to succeed, but the more of these 10 items you do right, the better your chances.
And I wish that all the inventors would write those things down and memorize them and commit to doing them.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, there's so much to learn about inventing. I mean, And what I found is they really don't teach you this in college. They don't teach you how to invent something and then bring it to market. It would be great if they did, and there's plenty of private companies that help fill that void, but they don't really teach that in college. In college, they teach you how to be an employee, not an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's so true. I know I find that. We have so many different guests on our show, Ron and I, and I learn something new with every guest, and I think that's something that every entrepreneur really needs to have an open mind to understand that you don't know everything, and you gotta always look for more and more information. You know, I was thinking as you were saying the top 10 reasons inventors succeed, you could put that towards entrepreneurs as well. And,
oh, yeah.
And the other thought I had, Paul, was maybe the top 10 reasons that inventors and entrepreneurs fail. Do you have a list of that?
I do. It's not just a total mirror image, but some of these are very closely related to the reasons why inventors succeed. I use the same format, Ron, from 10 to 1. 10, the unsuccessful inventor focuses most of his marketing efforts on finding licensing or marketing experts who will, quote, take my product and run with it for a, quote, piece of the action. You know, if you want quality work, you got to expect quality compensation. And that's one of the reasons why there's very few companies that will work on a contingency basis. There's even fewer that will do it well. A couple of them that I'm familiar with, Trevor Lambert's company up in Minneapolis called Lambert & Lambert does a real good job of this. They got almost a 40% success rate of the products they take on. Another one is Harvey Reese that does that for products in the industries in which he's familiar with. And one of my previous comments was, you know, invent in the industry that you're familiar with. Well, Harvey does that. He licenses products where he already has contacts and already knows the industry. There's a few others, but those are the first two that come to mind. Number nine, the unsuccessful inventor, and this is probably the most important one, guys. The unsuccessful inventor is usually guilty of call reluctance. What that means is you got to make phone calls. You got to get out there and knock on doors. Most inventors don't want to do that, but it's not just inventors. It's entrepreneurs. It's salespeople. Anytime you have the potential to hear the word no, you're going to be reluctant about making those calls. But yet, that's one of the most important things you got to do. You don't want to hear bad news about your invention or your business, but the more times you hear somebody say no, the closer you are to getting somebody say yes. I'll give you an example. About 1993, I was working for an ad agency in St. Louis, and one of my responsibilities was to license or actually sell advertising for a brand new financial publication. And it was so hard to do it because all my sales calls were long distance, meaning over the phone and through the mail. It was a brand new product, which was a second strike against us, and I didn't have any track record because it was a new product. So it's very difficult. The first 110 companies turned me down or else procrastinated and never did give me a decision. So I was literally 0 for 110. Finally, we went back and called on about the 10 best prospects. And one of those was a company out of Colorado that I never met the owner, but I was able to deal with the owner personally instead of having to deal with a committee or a manager. And he loved what we were doing once I got a chance to explain to him. And almost right away, he committed to buying $63,000 worth of advertising. What if I hadn't called on that company? It would have been total failure. So you just got to keep making calls. You know, if you have a decent product for which there's a market, eventually you can succeed, even though it is difficult making those calls sometimes. Keep in mind that some companies need inventions and new products as much as you need the company that you're trying to license your invention to. Okay, number eight, the unsuccessful inventor worries too much and focuses too much of his time on the possibility that someone might steal his idea. As a result, he keeps it secret. He never shows it to the people that can help him. Okay? How do you avoid this? Well, obviously, one is to, you know, get some patent protection, but that's expensive. There's a trade-off there. You want to make sure you have some market research that you've done that indicates the product has a good chance of succeeding. Okay? You also want to focus more on relationships. If you know the companies, you know the people face-to-face, you know them personally, the more likely they are to be trustworthy. If somebody's going to rip off your invention, doesn't it make sense that the person that would do it would be somebody that you don't yet know? People don't really steal from friends and well-respected acquaintances. They steal from strangers. And one more caveat on that idea. It's very rare that an invention gets stolen, but when it happens, it's like front page news, okay? It makes headlines because it's so rare and it's because it's so sensational. Number seven, the unsuccessful inventor procrastinates. They keep trying to refine and perfect their invention and keep working on the technical aspects over and over instead of contacting potential licensees or potential customers. Okay, it's time just to move on and quit trying to perfect it and start doing the business side of it, which is the difficult side. Number six, the unsuccessful inventor tries to go it alone. Work with others. Nobody succeeds by themselves, or very rarely do they succeed by themselves. Number five, the unsuccessful inventor fails to do his market research. Now, that sounds like a complicated term, but it really means being able to answer questions such as, how do you know if there's a market for your product? or how do you know what it will take for your customers to buy your product? Better yet, do you even know who your potential customers are? It doesn't make much sense to proceed at this point until you can answer these types of questions. All right, number four, the unsuccessful inventor fails because he falls blindly in love with his invention. You must be objective, okay? And that's true whether it be a new business or a new invention. You might want to do some research on this also. Talk to others, maybe some retail managers or those in the industry. Ask them what they think about your product or your business concept. If you just ask friends and relatives, most of them will typically say it's a great idea and that you should move forward. But the danger in relying on their advice is that sometimes they will tell you that because they want to be supportive of you. Okay? To find out what their real opinion is, ask them if they're willing to invest $10,000 of their own money in your new business or your invention. Then you'll find out right away how serious they were. You can tell them later that you were just joking. You really don't need their investment, but you wanted to find out how serious they were. Ron, the number three is the unsuccessful inventor fails because he does not know the details that you should know, such as, A, how much will a product cost to manufacture, or how much will the business require in funds to open and stay open? B, who are the companies most likely to be interested in my product? C, how many units of the product can you expect to sell? Can your licensee expect to sell? Another one, D, how is the product different or better than similar products? If it's more expensive, then why is it worth a higher price, and can you justify that in your selling efforts? Another one, is it patentable? Does it need to be patented? These are some of the questions that answer some of the details that you need to know. Do your homework in advance. Number two, another reason that inventors fail. They patent the product before determining the likelihood of whether or not the product will succeed. Patents are expensive, anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000. And yet 3% of all patents ever produce a profit for the inventor. And we're not going to go into all the reasons why at this point, but just remember the odds are against you, and it's a gamble. Okay. Number one, the unsuccessful inventor fails to realize that their idea isn't as good as they thought it was. When you realize that it's going to fail, cut your losses, move on to the next invention. Okay? So to summarize, anybody can fail, but to succeed requires hard work.
You know, Paul, I know some inventors that they committed all 10 of those.
Right.
That's something.
But then do they learn from that, or do they continue failing?
Yeah, that's the key, is to learn from your mistakes. You know, my wife tells me that I've had a very expensive education in my life.
Yeah, and I have too. I mean, you know, the thing is, the failures cost a lot, and they're expensive, they're painful. But if you can learn it from somebody else that's been there before and you know, been there, done that, so to say, it's so much quicker and easier, and then you can move on to your next big venture.
That's true. Well, you know, you once used the term fail fast, fail cheap in one of your newsletters. Could you explain what that means?
Absolutely. I heard a speaker one time. He's a consultant to the newspaper industry, and he helps them sell advertising online. His name's Mike Blender. And basically what he said was, fail fast, fail cheap. And it wasn't until about the second or third time I heard this guy speak at a trade industry show that I finally started to pay attention to this and really understand what he meant. The whole thing is, you know, a lot of products fail, a lot of business ideas fail. That's okay. Okay, Thomas Edison failed 10,000 times before he invented the incandescent light bulb and got it on the market. But the important thing is, if a product or a business venture is going to fail, find out as fast as possible and as inexpensively as possible. I will give you two examples, one for myself and one from a lady that called me about 15 years ago. The lady called and said she had a new product that she was marketing. She was doing the manufacturing and sales of it herself. Over the years, she has spent, get this, over $100,000, either of her own money, of grants, loans, and so on. Okay? $100,000. I asked her how many units she sold of her 1995 product, $20 product. You know what she told me? Four. She made $80 in sales, but it's already burned through $100,000.
Yikes.
Now, you and I, we all know, and I'm sure much of your audience, they know that, you know, she should have cut her losses. And at this point, she's probably just throwing good money after bad. So she should have failed fast, failed cheap, maybe done some more market research before spending all that money. If she would have, she would have found the product is probably going to fail, and she could have moved on to a new invention. Because if there's one thing I've learned, a lot of inventors invent more. They have more than one good idea. So whether you succeed or fail with your current invention or your current business, move on to the next one when it's time. About 3 years ago, and this kind of hurts to admit, but one of my products was an extension of my newspaper column. I was taking my column from print into video and trying to sell it first to TV stations and then the newspapers for their websites. It was a great product. It was very cool, and it had a number of potential end users. But it was the logistics of it, the economics of it, did not work because I was trying to get TV stations and then newspaper websites to run it and then help them sell advertising with it. Well, it wasn't really a huge portion of their income, so it was very tough for them to really get on board. And since it was a new media type thing, it was tough for them to sell it to their advertisers. So I really spent about 3 years developing it seriously and trying to sell it. In the end, it had a little bit of success, but not nearly enough to make it worthwhile. And that's when I learned of the concept of fail fast, fail cheap.
You know, Paul, you've often said to me, I know, that there's three things that every industry has. Tell our listeners, Paul, what those three things are and how they're relevant to them.
Yeah, and this is probably one of the most important things I can tell your audience. And this was not my idea, but about, back in 2002, I came up with the idea of writing a syndicated newspaper column called Invention Mysteries. Since I already have been working with inventors, I had plenty of material. And I basically write the stories for newspapers once a week. And the stories are all about, you know, the little-known true stories behind famous inventors, like Thomas Edison, Ben Franklin, and so on. And it's kind of written in a Paul Harvey style, where I reveal the surprise ending at the very end. Well, anyway, I ran into a guy that runs a basketball tournament all over the Midwest. His name was Gus Macker from Michigan. And I asked him, I said, Gus, you've expanded your tournament to 41 cities. How would I expand my newspaper column to cities like you've done? Because I didn't know if I should make, you know, face-to-face sales calls on all these newspaper editors. That would be very expensive and timely. Should I do a direct mail campaign? That would have a very little percentage chance for each piece of mail I sent out, and tons of follow-ups. I really didn't know how to do this. I knew I shouldn't just advertise because it was not the kind of product that you buy through advertising. So what Gus Macker told me was, he said, your industry has some kind of trade association or conference. Find out who that industry is, or industry trade association is, and then go to their annual conference. So I did that. I found out there was I live on the border of Illinois and Missouri, and there I heard of something called the Missouri Press Association. So I went to that conference, which happened to be about 3 weeks later, and then I kind of figured if Missouri has a press association, Illinois probably has one too. Well, that was 2 weeks later, so I went to that trade association, and with those two conferences, I probably met 100 prospects over two weekends. It was just a great use of my marketing dollars, a great use of my time, and I ended up having about 18 or 19 newspapers buying my syndicated column from me within the first year. Okay, I later found a syndicator to help market that for me, but I was self-syndicating it, just like an inventor who goes into production himself and then sells his product himself. So trade association is the first one. Trade magazine is the second one. Every industry has that. Some industries have a dozen or more trade associations, like the auto industry. But most have one or two. And the third one, it's a trade show or conference. Those three things. That's probably the biggest and best way for an inventor or an entrepreneur in terms of his marketing dollars. And every industry has one. All three, actually.
Okay. Well, you know, every product, Paul, has got a product life cycle. What do inventors need to know about product life cycles?
Well, that explains what a product goes through over the course of time. It's introduction, growth, maturity, and decline. And as a product, I'll kind of explain what happens in each of those four. During the introduction stage of a new product or a new industry, there's usually just one company involved. We'll use the cell phone industry as an example. Let's say Motorola was the first company to come out with the concept of carrying a little portable cell phone with you. Well, at the time, they weren't making any money because they were spending a ton of money on advertising and promotion and really focusing on showing people the benefits of a cell phone, really educating the public, which is very costly. So there was no competition, but a couple years later, along came other companies, Nokia, Sprint, Ericsson, others to compete with Motorola. So Motorola changed their focus from educating the public about the benefits of a cell phone to now they were focusing on their brand. Their ads showed why you should buy a Motorola brand instead of just a cell phone. So as other competitors entered the market, okay, the market share for Motorola decreased as a percentage, but there were a lot more customers that were now buying cell phones. So the industry grew by leaps and bounds. So everybody started making a little bit of money at it. Well, eventually you're going to find the maturity stage. And I would say that's where we're at now, wouldn't you? In terms of cell phones?
Almost, I think 12-year-old kids have got cell phones now.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I read that the household penetration is higher than TVs now.
Wow, and it only took 15, 20 years, didn't it?
So.
It took about 40 years for TVs to reach that saturation point. In fact, I ran into an older friend of mine a while back, and I said, Kevin, I bought a cell phone a couple years ago, and now I'm no longer the last American person to not have a cell phone. And he just laughed. He said, I don't have one. So he is officially the only American to not have a cell phone anymore.
My mother doesn't. My dad does, but my mother doesn't.
Okay. It's only a matter of time, right?
That's right.
Go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Well, so we're at that saturation point with cell phones. Will people always have cell phones? Probably not, because eventually something will come along to replace a cell phone, and that's when a product or an invention goes into the fourth stage, and that's sales decline. Okay, now as far as the product life cycle, it can be a very long life cycle, lasting decades or centuries. Or it can be just a few months. The ones that last maybe just a few months are fads. Okay, they rise fast and they drop fast in terms of sales and profits. On the other end of the spectrum, products like cars. You know, cars are still, you know, they really haven't reached their maturity point yet. Maybe close to it, but cars will always be in demand until something better comes along. Milk. Where is milk in the product life cycle? Probably the maturity point. It's probably always going to be there because you're probably never going to replace milk as a product. But if there is a better product come along, then milk will be in the decline phase. So why is that relevant to inventors and the companies that bring out new products? Well, there's always a demand, an interest in new products. Companies need them. And one way to prove to yourself that companies need new products is ask yourself this question. How many successful companies have been around for a long time that only have one product in their product line? I bet you could sit and think about this one for hours or days. I don't think you could ever come up with just a one-product company that's successful over the long term. They either innovate and come up with new products, or they go out of business.
Yeah, because even Velcro has got, you know, how many different line extensions? Quite a few.
Exactly, and that's a great point. You don't want to. You have a great product, and then you come up with extensions. You maximize that brand name. Some examples of extensions: when Coca-Cola came out with Diet Coke or Coke Zero, all they're doing is leveraging that Coke brand name, which is so popular with probably billions of people by now, that it's easy for them to come up with a diet version of Coke. And that's a brand extension.
You know, Paul, you say there's only two things that a business really needs. What are those two things, and how are they relevant?
Well, it all comes down to these two things. A company needs to increase sales. They need to decrease expenses. So if you got a new invention or a new idea you're trying to get a company to buy from you, that's really what they're looking for, is how is your product going to increase sales for them, or how is it going to decrease their costs? And sometimes when you pitch something to a company, they may not be real interested at first or at all until you convince them that, you know, you have other companies in their industry, which is a polite way of saying your competitors are going to be buying this if you don't. Okay? So you may have to use a what I call a negative motive to convince them that it's in their best interest to carry your product, because they're either going to make sales from it or they're going to lose sales of their existing products because one of their competitors is going to license it from you and sell it at the same place they're selling their products.
Okay, well, Paul, you know, I've read in the different literature that an independent inventor's got somewhere between 1 in 100 and 1 in 1,000 chance that their product will succeed in the marketplace. What do you think are the main reasons why it's so hard to bring a new product to market, and why do so many fail?
I think there's a couple main reasons. I don't mean to simplify it, because it's really not, there's not a simple answer to it. There's a number of reasons. I think the two biggest ones, though, usually it's because the product wasn't marketed properly or marketed at all. You know, there's a the saying we've all heard is, build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. Nothing could be more false than that. You know, if you don't go out and show it to potential customers, show it to companies that can license it or buy it from you, nothing's going to happen with it. Most inventors don't want to do that. Again, call reluctance. They're afraid of failure. And, you know, when does an inventor fail? It's not during the development process. It's during the business end of that process. And that's what most of them don't want to do. They may rely on a company that offers to take their invention to run with it, which rarely works out. Or they might rely on some of these TVs that advertise on late night, some of these companies that advertise on late night TV that really don't do you much good and can do you more harm in the process. Usually the best person to market their invention, it should be the inventor, because, number one, you know more about it than anybody else. Number two, you care about it more than anybody else. And number three, you're going to invent additional products, so it helps if you understand the process so that when you do have additional products, you've already done that process and you can do it again. The second major reason why most new products fail, I would say, is because there may not be a market for them. Or maybe they're ahead of the market in terms of time. Maybe they're behind the market. You know, there's 25,000 products in different variations of products on a typical supermarket grocery shelf. So, yeah, there are a lot of new products out there, but it's a very limited space. Okay, that's why getting distribution is always key, because that's where the customers are. It's also very difficult because of what they call clutter. So, to recap, two biggest reasons why it's so difficult. One is because the product isn't marketed correctly, if at all, and two is because there may not be a market for that product.
Well, you know, thinking about my businesses and starting them and so on, I've often wondered if I should have done it part-time at first and then gone head-first. What's your opinion of that, and what would you recommend to business owners as they start out on their entrepreneurial road, and maybe also an inventor, as he or she starts out on their inventor road?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, sometimes if you let your optimism blind you to reality, you might end up quitting your day job, and that's a mistake I made years ago. I thought I could make it on my own, and at that point, I wasn't ready to. You know, it's a good idea that if you have bills to pay, you really ought to keep working your day job and then work your invention business or your part-time business you want to start up. Do that in the evenings and weekends if you can. It's kind of a catch-22, though, because if you're selling to business people, well, when are they there? From 8 to 5. So it's tough to do that on the weekends and the evenings. You can only do so much by email, And that you can do on the evenings and weekends, but it's always going to be a challenge. So there's a trade-off there. You can quit your day job and, you know, have more time available for it, but you don't have any income coming in. Or B, you can keep your day job, and then you don't have as much time during the daytime to contact customers. So I think that's really a question that everyone depends on themselves based on his participation and what their abilities are.
Okay. Well, Paul, this has really been great. How can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about what you do?
A couple ways. They can go to my website, which is marketlaunchers.com, marketlaunchers.com. While there, they can learn more. Well, they can actually access the archives of the newsletter that I've been writing for about 12 years called The Online Inventor. They can sign up for it on the left side of the homepage. There's a button where you can enter your email address, and you'll get a free copy of the email sent to the newsletter sent to you by email every week. And the number, the phone number is 800-337-5758. But the easiest way to start is just go to marketlaunchers.com. And what we do, Bill and Ron, you already know this, but some of your listeners may not know. I build websites for inventors and small business owners. So if you have a new product that you want to attract the attention of a company, you really want to get a website so that when you contact them, when you get on the phone and call companies, you can give them your website address so they can see how your invention looks and how it works. The old way was to send brochures through the mail, but then you got to follow up and wonder if the brochure ever got to the decision maker and all that. By having a website, you can do it over the phone and through the computers. It's much more efficient and more effective.
All right. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Paul. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Another great show, Bill.
It really was, Ron. I really enjoyed that today.
And could you thank today's sponsor?
Well, sure. Our sponsor today is Entrepreneur Sales and Marketing. We go the extra step so you don't have to fret. Visit our website at entrepreneursales.com.
Okay, and be sure and go to our blog, thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com, to listen again to today's show, plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.